Welcome to Level with Emily Reese. This is music by Arthur Anassi for A City Sleeps, made by Harmonix. You're going to hear from a number of folks who work at Harmonix in today's episode, including the co-founder, Alex Rigopoulos. We'll tell you more about all of that in just a bit. First, our patron of the week is Craig Parker. Craig sent me a list of 11 songs, and we spoke about two of them. We talked about Far Horizons from Skyrim by Jeremy Soule and Wanda Wanda from Katamari Damacy by Yu Mikake.
Katamari Damacy kind of came out of left field. I really didn't know too much about it. You know, I just kind of tried it. It seemed like some silly, weird game where you roll stuff up in a ball and... You know, but then the music, that title theme music, like I just, that started everything. And then the very first level is this song, Wanda Wanda. And it's, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I love sort of flexibility of video game music because it can, you can have, you know, straight up orchestral tracks, or you can have the most electronic beeps and bloops and everything. And everything works together somehow, and it doesn't make any sense. And Katamari Damacy kind of has all of that. Like, it's one of those songs that's kind of like an earworm song where I just couldn't get it out of my head when I heard it.
Yeah, but it's not a bad earworm, right? You know, like,
no,
that's the thing I love about it is that it does get stuck in your head, but it's such good stuff.
Totally. Yeah. No, definitely not a bad earworm at all. It's, I actually just refound the song again, just searching around like maybe a couple months ago and was like putting it on repeat and just playing it over and over again because I love the sound of it. I love it.
And tell me about Skyrim, the Skyrim music. You clearly played the game.
So, I mean, Jeremy Soule is a genius, basically, at least when it comes to video game music. I guess he's been doing it forever. But that one specific song really kind of felt like a movie piece. Like, it felt like, you know, this emotional song from this epic film just really kind of brought out the emotion in me, you know, when I listen to it. Like, I can't help get teary-eyed listening to that specific song. Such a beautiful piece. I mean, the whole album is gorgeous, but that one song really, really stands out for me.
So you played Skyrim then, right?
Yes.
What kind of class did you like to play?
I guess I kind of messed around with it most of the game, but most of the time I played, you could almost dual class that game. So I dueled, like, one hand was magic and one hand was swords, and then I'd flip the magic hand out for summoning, and I'd summon something. You know, I'd summon,
nice,
like, a minion that would help me out along the way as well, and then just, you know, whack people in the head with swords. But I love the flexibility of that game. I mean, you can literally be any kind of character you want, any kind of class you want. You can mix and match and meld everything together.
Craig's other choices were Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite by Gary Scheiman,
mm-hmm.
Chrono's theme from Chrono Trigger by Yasunori Mitsuda. Star Stealing Girl from Chrono Cross, also by Yasunori Mitsuda. Steal for Humans from The Witcher 3 by Marcin Przybylowicz. Mad Forest from Castlevania 3 by Hidenori Maezawa and Company. The Propeller Knight theme from Shovel Knight by Jake Kaufman. To the Sun from Final Fantasy XIV by Nobuo Uematsu and more. Aquatic Ambience from Donkey Kong Country by David Wise. And Meltdown 2 from Cave Story 3D by Danny Baranowski. You can learn more about becoming a patron of the week at patreon.com/level. Sam and I were at PAX East in Boston last week, and we had so much fun. One of the highlights for us was visiting Harmonix Music Studios. Harmonix created games like Guitar Hero, Rock Band, and so many other wonderful music-based games. So on Thursday, I spoke with John Carter, Arthur Anassi, Steve Pardo, and Pete McGuire. Then we went back the next day to speak with co-founder Alex Rigopoulos, and it was really, really amazing. First, you'll hear from John, Arthur, Pete, and Steve.
I'm Arthur Anassi. I am a sound designer and composer here. Been here for a while.
I'm John Carter. I'm a designer here. I was the creative lead on Beat Sports. I've also been here for a while.
Steve Pardo, also audio composer, sound designer here. Also have been here for a while, as of we all, I think. Yep.
Pete McGuire. I'm a sound designer and composer as well. And I have also been here quite a while, maybe
for the
longer than
for the most.
Yeah,
while. That's right.
Really,
that's true.
So, when we're saying a while, what do we mean?
I interned on Frequency.
Wow, yeah. was that the first?
Uh huh.
And then Amplitude,
right?
So, what was that like? Because it's not like people hadn't tried music games before, but what was it like to kind of be here for the birth of Harmonix, really?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, everybody, we had a bunch of ideas, you know, what a music game should be, and just, you know, kind of made the core of who we are, I feel like. And, you know, that was built back into, you know, Amplitude was kind of like this crazy game that no one really understood it because there wasn't anything out there like that. But then that was kind of the core that kind of like got reassembled into Guitar Hero and like the other games we did. So, yeah.
So have you all been a part? Well, were you guys here when Guitar Hero was happening?
No.
Okay, because that ended up moving elsewhere and then Rock Band started, right?
Yeah,
right.
I started during the first Rock Band.
Okay.
So,
and that had to be just crazy.
Yeah, no, it was totally crazy. I mean, you know, everyone was like kind of high on the success of Guitar Hero, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was employee number 70-something, and like 2 months later we were pushing 200, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. And so there was like this crazy exponential growth of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got hired during the peak
of
hiring circa Rock Band 2 DLC, like right before Beatles.
Well, I remember I was in grad school in Lincoln, Nebraska in the mid-2000s, and I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and her name was Erin, and it was like 1 or 2 in the morning, and we're just hanging out, having a good time watching shows or whatever, and she starts talking about Guitar Hero, and I'm like, you know, I've never played that. And she's like, we're driving to Walmart right now. And we did. We went to Walmart at like 2 in the morning and bought the Guitar Hero thing for my PS2 and went back and played Guitar Hero till it was daylight. I mean, it was just like, okay, I get it. This is amazing. And it really speaks to, I think, the knowledge of you all as musicians, right? I mean, you all know a thing or two about music, so you know what it means to have a meaningful gaming experience as musicians.
Yeah, well, that's funny. I remember the first time I played Guitar Hero, it was my roommate in college, AJ, actually. I don't know if you remember.
Yep.
Yeah. He was like QA, I think, for Guitar Hero, and he like finished the game, and he brought it to the dorm room to show us. And I remember playing it and thinking, man, I could play this song in real life. This is stupid.
Which is like the reaction a lot of people have.
I had like the classic guitar player reaction.
Sure.
And then I played a little more, and I was like, oh, this is stupid. But then like an hour later, I was like, let me try that stupid thing again.
You know? okay, I want to try it on expert now.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually it dawned on me how much fun I was actually having.
Yeah, very fun. So what were these transitions like then? Because you always seem to, as a company, try to kind of up the game or at least change the game. You're not doing the same things over and over again. Even when you're adding DLC, that's not the same thing. But, you know, what are those conversations like? Where do you guys like to try and take things as we move forward in VR and all these kinds of things?
Yeah.
I think it just starts with a nugget, you know, like an idea. And, you know, with Alex and Aaron and Greg, I think they would kind of vet these ideas and like really figure out if it was something that represented the core of what harmonics should be about and see if like that idea should go forward. And I don't know, you know, at the heart of all these games, it kind of comes from us all being musicians, you know, like just about everybody's in a band or makes music, and which is awesome. And
right.
And like we're all kind of like focused on the same thing, which is really unique, I feel like.
It's like, even though we are like, well, three of us are like on the audio team, John is very much so a musician and could be an audio guy.
He played guitar on a Beat Sports song.
Did we ship that?
Yeah, we did.
Never got to that level.
But I think that like a lot of our designers are very much so people that could be on the audio, you know, so it's really helpful for, you know, early on in our prototyping and pre-production phase to just always have like an audio person, a musician that's like you're able to work with and iterate on really quickly, like really cool ideas. Like they're coming to you with the cool music ideas, you know.
That's amazing.
There's kind of a really cool kind of back and forth, I think, between, you know, like upper management and the rest of the team. And like, you know, there's kind of two approaches. There's a music simulation type game, which we do, which obviously Guitar Hero and a Rock Band and even Dance Central. I mean, you're actually dancing and stuff, but it's still based on existing musical experiences. And then there's all these other types of games, you know, like Amplitude, Beat Sports, and lots of other stuff we're working on, where it's sort of like, how do we bring music into other types of gameplay as well? And so I think those are kind of the two ways we think about it. And just kind of attacking the company's mission statement of using games and technology to help people and non-musicians enjoy music.
I think if someone had shown me A City Sleeps without audio, I might not have assumed that that was a harmonics game. And that is really impressive to me because it's so different. So talk to me a little bit about that project, and that's something I've not played.
Arthur's,
I've only seen. So tell me about that game, Arthur.
Actually, I don't know if I could say this. I'm going to say it anyway. It was right after we were working on Chroma, and a core group of leads on Chroma were thinking about ways of doing this sort of musically reactive shooter idea. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of put our heads together and we thought, all right, what's the best way to do that? Side scroll in. The artist, Pearly, on the team, he and I are both like really big Japanese shoot 'em up fans, like shmups,
yep.
Like bullet hell stuff. So we decided to go after that. And, you know, of course, with the same kind of mission statement of infusing music into that, we saw it as like, oh, this is like a no-brainer. Like, you're flying through a 2D space. It doesn't have a ton of load like in a 3D environment, you know, mm-hmm. like mental load. And you can make really interesting music that serves as gameplay.
Mm-hmm. And so you wrote some of the music for that?
I wrote all the music.
All the music.
Yeah, so on that game was kind of like a breakout thing for me because I wrote all the music on it and I was like the level designer because if I wrote the music, I had to also design where enemies were going to be, how they'd fire, like sure. layout, how long the level was, how it played. So it was very closely intertwined, like just like how in Rock Band, like you're building a level by making the gems and stuff. This is the same thing, like you're changing the difficulty depending on the complexity of the music or creating a mood for a boss and like writing a boss. I actually have to go and write a boss and then people play it and then they're like, this doesn't work. So you have to go and rewrite the boss, you know?
Wow.
Like, so it was a really unique way of working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really had fun working on that game.
A beautiful game too, the art and everything. Just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
What kinds of things do you learn from other studios that are doing music games? Like, you know, some people will say, oh, I love the Bit Trip Runner series or whatever. What are some of the things that you admire or try and incorporate? Or on the flip side, what are some things where you feel like you've influenced the rest of the music gaming community?
So there's this one game, I have to say this, called 140.
Yeah, 140. We come back to it many times.
Which inspired me so much for like A City Sleeps. Like,
really?
It's amazing. Like,
really?
You have to play it, yeah.
I'll check
it out.
It's
my favorite music game.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's coming out on consoles, or it's like being like relaunched with, or something like that.
See, now you're speaking my language.
And it's awesome. And it's got a similar thing as City Sleeps, or maybe you were going there, where it's like the difference between the soundtrack and the sound design is like non-existent, really.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it's a game that manages to make you have musical actions without thinking in musical rhythm or theory. Like, you're not thinking about being on time, but just the way the game plays, it forces you to be on time. So you're kind of, you kind of fall into creating music, you know? It's really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I feel like whenever we have the time to try to come up, well, we have in these seasons at Harmonix where we have kind of these prototyping, you know, we're just coming up with fresh ideas for fresh platforms, whatever. We always come back to 140s, be like, they did so many cool things right. And that's like a constant source of inspiration for us. And, you know, no matter kind of whatever type of game we're making, it's like, that one succeeded. How can we use that success in this experience here?
And John, you said something just a second ago about how, you know, in a lot of your games, there's no distinction between the sound design and the actual soundtrack.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think about a game like The Witcher or something, those are, I mean, obviously that game is giant, but, you know, it's very separate. Mm-hmm. So that means you guys have to be pretty good buddies when you're working together on these things, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing Arthur was saying about, you know, about being a level designer and being an audio designer or the composer, it's like trying to blur the lines between those things. Just makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's something really fun about trying to get people to think, and we were definitely trying to do this with Beat Sports too, but don't get people thinking, I'm beat matching now, like do it to the music, like kind of coax them into that via the gameplay. Then you start to feel something really special between you and the music. It's sort of gently bring them there instead of just saying, do this to the music now, like only think about the music.
So tell us a little bit more about Beat Sports and what that's about. And
So Beat Sports is... it combines the joy of hitting balls with the joy of hitting notes.
I've heard that sentence so many times.
So the idea with Beat Sports, it came out of like an R&D experiment that happened when one of the kind of seasons that Steve alluded to where we were just making prototypes. And the core mechanic we were playing with was just like beat synced projectiles, you know? Similar kind of to what you see in our like the gameplay in Fantasia Music Evolved, kind of like that. And also we've done tons of experiments over the years with like, you know, what if it was like Fruit Ninja to the beat kind of thing?
Yeah.
That's another thing we do a lot at Harmonix is like, we'll say, well, what about this game? But like, to the beat.
Using beat production.
Which is like kind of a running joke, but also sometimes it works. You know?
Sure.
But anyway, so Beat Sports, we had this kind of prototype. It was like this weird dungeon crawling thing where you were like deflecting fireballs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a mobile thing. And then we heard about this Apple TV opportunity, which is very exciting. And so we decided to start thinking in terms of that platform in a more casual audience. And so we reskinned it, just thinking in terms of like real world interactions, like wizards and fireballs, not something that you generally think interact with in your everyday life, but sports is something, and like ball sports is something that people definitely are used to, like baseball, tennis, volleyball, that kind of thing. And then we just tried to expand on the idea of like, it's really fun and viscerally satisfying to like, you know, if a baseball's coming at you, you're holding a bat, you know what to do. This visceral kind of like lizard brain appeal, and then trying to combine that with the satisfaction of performing things rhythmically was what Beat Sports grew out of. And then just really wanting to make it as fun and family friendly as possible and accessible and intuitive using like these motion controls on the new Apple TV. And so we kind of built a prototype around that, started trying to figure out all the sorts of different types of sports we could use. We ended up with like, I don't know, dozens of prototypes using weird like mishmashes of sports. We wanted to keep it silly so it's not like, this is baseball, this is tennis. We decided that there were aliens that were obsessed with sports, but they're from a musical galaxy. Nice. So everything they do is to the beat. but they're obsessed with Earth sports, and you know, so but they can't get them right because they're aliens, and so it's like weird mishmashes of like tennis and volleyball and that kind of thing. So it's a collection of mini games, each one kind of exploring a different form of ball whack and fun.
I'm curious, you know, in the last decade, there have been so many changes, right? And, you know, with Guitar Hero, it was all very just the guitar and the TV. And then we had Dance Central with the Kinect and how much that changed. And then Fantasia with just all the motion stuff with Fantasia. So now VR is a thing. So does this make it more exciting for you, more daunting for you? I mean, what does that do to you creatively?
It's like now a lot of studios or people like who are creating games can kind of take a new forefront almost. Mm-hmm. Like anyone with a dope idea for VR can kind of step forward and
levels the playing field.
Yeah, which is nice, you know, because nobody knows, like you say, nobody knows really what the rules are yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think audio is going to be really important. We kind of discovered that, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Scalable, but like the possibility for it to be amazing, you know, to be like super impactful, I think is super wide, like more than it's ever been. Like we could go really deep with creating a 3D audio experience. You
know? Well, and you're working on music VR, right?
Yeah.
And this is like when I was in, again, grad school, I got my very first iMac. And I remember, like, opening iTunes and putting on the visualizer and, like, listening to Pink Floyd. And I wasn't even stoned. And I sat there for, like, 6 hours and just stared. And I was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And now you're taking that up a notch, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're trying.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you think about it one way, it's a one-time investment. So it's actually cheaper than drugs. you know, long-term. Anyway. But no, yeah. So, I mean, we're definitely exploring. I mean, VR is so new, right? It's like, you know, you have to throw so much of what you know out of the window. And it's like kind of an inherently psychedelic technology.
Yes.
And so music VR, we're definitely embracing that to some degree. But we're also, it's a collection of different answers to the question, like, what is a VR music visualizer? So we definitely do, you know, we have a world that's super trippy. A couple that are kind of more based in the real world, and some that are pretty passive, some that are interactive using the PlayStation Move controllers. And so we're kind of like taking a lot of different angles because there's just so much to explore.
Yes.
So I think, you know, we'll have something for the people that, you know, miss Winamp, miss that visualizer. but then we're also hoping to just use VR as a tool to help people enjoy the music they love in lots of different ways.
I think back to your question about what it's like to transition.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because the PS2, I'm not sure if you remember, but it had the iToy. We did a game called Antigrav for it.
Really?
And so it was a motion tracking hoverboard game.
Nice.
And so that was some technology that I think that was like a little too early before, you know, it should have come out. But then, you know, with the Kinect, it was like, oh, this seems familiar. But as these new technologies appear, you start to build like a library of like what works, what didn't, and then you have like all these different things to pull from when you have a new VR. Like, oh, it's a whole new thing to figure out, but we know some things that might work based on past experiences.
We're doing a lot of stuff like back and forth of what we think is going to work and then doesn't work. Well, we're doing Rock Band VR, and the whole thing is just like, what? This didn't work. Uh-oh. Let's try this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, you don't think that's cool? Uh-oh. All right, well, we can't make that game and that game. But you know what I mean? It's just like a lot of trial and error trying to figure out what works in VR, what like we thought would work in a traditional 2D on the TV display game. Mm-hmm. Doesn't translate. So, I mean, it's fun. It's like, it's cool to be a part of the tides that change, but with that power comes responsibility.
I think there's definitely a sense, I get that there's a sense on the Rock Band VR team and certainly on the music VR team where like, you know, we experimented with iToy, made a cool game for that. We had success with Kinect. We had like, we introduced guitar controllers to everybody. Like now VR is new. We better figure out how to do something cool. You know?
Well, the nice thing about Rock Band VR is you're standing on stage. You're not being teleported or like,
amazing.
You know, you're not on like a roller coaster. You're not, we're not worried about dizzying anybody. You know, there's no
like
bar
moving
factor.
The player, yeah.
So it's like, it's actually really nice to not have to worry about that part. But like the whole playing music on stage part is the problem that we're solving, you know. And it's a really fun problem to solve. And I think VR lends itself really well for that experience.
It'd be funny if people, you know, like, decide they can't play that game because they have performance anxiety or something like that.
That could be a very real problem, actually.
Oh, interesting.
They should play music VR instead.
They complement each other.
Right. Totally.
It's a one-two punch.
When you're stressed out from being on tour. Sit down.
Wait, can you play music VR in Rock Band VR?
Do you have hookers and blow in Rock Band VR too?
Hey, narrative's in progress.
Yeah,
in progress.
Still working on that.
I'd love to just hear a little background about how each of you got into this and how you realized this was what you wanted to do with your life. So go ahead,
sure.
Peter.
Yeah, so I studied at Oberlin Conservatory and went to the Tamar Department.
Instrument? Is your instrument?
Just piano. Yeah.
Okay. Just piano.
Yeah, well,
just a useless instrument.
Just that thing. Yeah. I was friends with Josh Randall, Robot Kid. I'm not sure if you've seen his stuff, but he got me an internship, and then, you know, I was like, this is really cool. It's kind of like a dream job, and that's kind of, it all happened. So good old nepotism, I guess. At school, I was studying at the Tamar Department, and that's technology and music and related arts. So it was kind of like a composition background with like a tech focus. Mm-hmm. So we were doing like installations and doing all kinds of like real-time video, and it was a lot of fun. And so that kind of like got me into this world, sort of that mindset.
What do you enjoy about sound design?
I like it when it all works. No, it's just like when you have that idea and then you're able to like come up with the sounds and then implement it in a way that works exactly the way you had it in your brain, I think is really satisfying. So, of course, composing is really fun too.
Definitely.
Just like, you know, figuring out what the emotion should be at this moment and like trying to nail that, or like doing something completely different and seeing if it will work.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
University of Miami, got my jazz saxophone degree. There's the old Bessie over there.
Nice.
Which I got to use the other day for music VR. Thank you.
That's right.
Arthur.
Fun.
Smooth.
Yeah. Master's in composition, got hired for harmonics like right around the time of Rock Band 2, Beatles.
Nice.
And yeah, dream job situation. And then I started doing more composing at harmonics and outside of harmonics. And, you know, now I'm doing, fresh off of Beatsports, which was friggin' amazing project with amazing people. And now we're solving incredibly tough problems with Rock Band VR. But it's really fun, and it's a fun project to be a part of.
Awesome.
I also came to games through music. It never really occurred to me that games was a thing you could do for a living. In college, my roommate AJ worked at Harmonix for a little bit. It was my first exposure to the company. Then another friend of mine, Matt, started working here before we graduated. And then I like heard about this like production assistant opening and just kind of lucked into a job here. And then it slowly dawned on me that this was something I maybe wanted to keep doing, and eventually kind of got it more into the creative side of things. But yeah, I mean, I've been into music my whole life and was really interested in harmonics from that side. Like the whole bringing music to the non-musical masses was always really intriguing to me.
I went to Berkeley for music production engineering, graduated from there, bounced around Boston, working in studios and stuff, staying up until 7 in the morning, doing that whole racket. And then I applied to harmonics and like started in QA.
Interesting.
Because that was the only gig I could get, mm-hmm. and I was hungry. So I worked my way up from there, and my skills helped me get to where I was, you know. So I always definitely always wanted to make games, though, since I was a kid. So
how about favorite soundtracks? You guys have favorite game soundtracks?
This is like saying
I'm so glad you asked this question.
This is like really? Saying your favorite band is the Beatles. But, I mean, I remember at one point in high school, dawning on me that the music that united my generation was the theme from Super Mario. I would just go up to, I went to a really international school. It was, kids from all over the place. And I would say, what song is this? And I would start humming it. And immediately, everybody knew. And da, 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 da. So, I mean, you know. That's a super lame answer.
No,
it's powerful music.
Yeah. It's that is what I think clued me into the power that video game music had culturally. Mm-hmm. Super Mario 1.
I mean, for me, it's always going to be Metroid. You know, just always.
It's good. It's so good.
It's the first thing that comes to mind when I hear those songs in its purest form. I'm just how is this so beautiful and so rudimentary? It's, mm-hmm. it's amazing.
Also, slightly cooler addendum, the Katamari soundtrack.
Oh.
Killer. Killer soundtrack. Yeah.
But, you know, Journey's cool, too.
Journey's all right. Yeah.
No, really. It's awesome.
For 8-bit stuff, I mean, that's kind of what I grew up with, and it's, very dear to my heart. But mm-hmm. Metroid, for sure. But, Space Harrier is one of my favorite themes ever. I don't know. I think what the Naughty Dog guys are doing in terms of just implementing their own instruments into their compositions, I think is really cool.
How about you?
Oh, man, I got this. So 140 for sure, because 140. Streets of Rage 1, amazed, mm-hmm. oh my god. When I first heard it, I flipped out, because it was hip-hop is in game, mm-hmm. in games?
Nice.
Are you serious? They even had a vocal sample in there, on the boss fight. And then one that kind of changed how I thought about game music was Sonic CD, that Sonic Boom song.
Yep.
I was you could put vocals in video game music?
Yeah.
That was the first one I ever heard that. If you're strong, you can fly, you can reach the other side.
So what's next for Harmonix? You guys are working on Rock Band VR, and you're getting ready for PAX this weekend, which by the time this airs, it'll be over. But yeah, what are you guys all working on right now?
Yeah, so we're on Rock Band VR.
Okay.
That's a big project that'll last us through the year, most mm-hmm. likely.
Well, thank you all very much with me. Such a pleasure to get to know a little bit more about you guys and the company. So sure appreciate what you do and look forward to sharing this with everyone.
Yeah. Thanks. It's been fun.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Huge thanks to John, Arthur, Pete, and Steve for speaking with us last week. We look forward to playing whatever Harmonix is coming up with next. We also chatted with Alex Rigopoulos, who co-founded Harmonix in 1995 with Iran Egozi. Well, first of all, thank you so much for carving some time out. I know this is a really busy time for all of you. So
it is, but
very
it's
much
also a very fun, exciting time for us. You know,
true.
Boston is not really an epicenter of the video game industry. So when like 60,000 gamers descend upon the city to celebrate, it's a pretty fun time to be a game developer in Boston.
When you started Harmonix, what inspired you? Because I know that you're a musician. I know that you are interested in technology. What inspired you both to start Harmonix back in the day?
Well, both Aran, my co-founder, and I came from music backgrounds and computer science or engineering backgrounds. Interestingly, Aran is a much more serious musician than I am and also a much more serious engineer than I am. I was a hack at both things, but actually it was the fact that I was such a hack as a musician that was a big part of the motivation for, you know, both of us to work on this problem, you know, which is that almost everyone in the world loves music and feels this innate urge to make music and tries to learn an instrument at some point and quickly discovers that it's very, very difficult. You know, the path to having a joyful experience making music is a long and difficult one, and most people don't have the time or talent or patience to make it through to the other side, and so they quit. And then they spend the rest of their lives still feeling this this urge to make music, feeling that itch, and playing a lot of air guitar and singing to a lot of, you know, music that they love, but just not really having an outlet to scratch that itch that we all have to make music. And so we just, Aran and I just felt like we were both kind of born to solve this problem. This was the problem that really motivated us and got us out of bed in the morning. So we started Harmonix to solve it. And, you know, in the beginning, we weren't making video games. We were just making interactive music software of various sorts, and games didn't come until a few years later.
Frequency and Amplitude were the first.
They were.
And we just used controllers for that.
We did.
So how did the hardware come in then? What made you to decide we need to step this up a notch and make this a new experience?
Well, you know, one of the hard lessons we learned from Frequency and Amplitude was that, you know, once people got inside the play experience, they had a fantastic time. But getting them over the hump, getting them to play the game was quite difficult because those games were completely foreign looking. It was a completely abstract visual presentation of the music gameplay experience. The controller was not a natural device for, you know, not an intuitive device for making music. I mean, it was forbidding. It was not appealing at a superficial level as a music making experience. And I think that what was so compelling about putting a fake guitar in people's hands with Guitar Hero is that it solved all of those problems. People immediately understood the conceit. Who were they? What were they doing? And we tapped into a pretty deep fantasy that a lot of people have. The rock star fantasy is a universal one. So in many ways, it was about overcoming that initial barrier of getting people to understand, like, what were we asking them to do or what were we asking them to become, and offering something to them in a package that they could easily understand. And even past that first moment of getting them to try it, there's something very powerful about having that guitar in your hands. It makes it it continues to pay off the fantasy and preserve the suspension of disbelief while you're playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, I am a terrible guitar player, but fulfilling that fantasy of being able to play Slash's guitar solo is amazing. Yeah. It felt just wonderful.
It did. I mean, we, I still, to this day, I mean, we've been at it now since, I guess, 2005, so more than 10 years, and I still play Rock Band most weekends because it's still incredibly entertaining to me.
So was that a natural progression for you then? After Guitar Hero, you're like, well, we could make this a whole band. I mean, was that kind of how that started?
Yeah. I mean, actually, we had a vision for a full band experience even before Guitar Hero, but okay. It was already the idea of manufacturing plastic guitars was an absurd proposition. It was like hard to get shelf space and distribution. It meant that it had to be a very expensive game because of this peripheral. Peripheral-based games had never been successful in the past. Music games had never been successful in the past. And yes, the idea of putting them together, I mean, it was just the whole thing like defied all reason, right? So it was already absurd enough to just make a single peripheral focused game. One step further of making a multi-peripheral game that cost, you know, a couple $100s to purchase, it was completely absurd in the beginning. So all things in steps, you know, and then, you know, when, much to our surprise, frankly, Guitar Hero really took off and became a thing and really worked, at that point, it was a natural next step, you know, because as amazing as making music is by yourself, it becomes a completely different experience when you're suddenly doing it with a group of other people. And so in a way, it was just a natural, obvious progression.
Was it scary, though, because Rock Band was more expensive?
It was terrifying. I mean, we, you know, when we were on the eve of launching Rock Band, and this was holiday of 2007, on the one hand, we felt great about the experience we had created. We were like, yes, it feels amazing to do this with a whole group of people. Like, mm-hmm. there's something special here. On the flip side, the bundle costs $170, right? That's a really expensive video game, $170. Mm-hmm. And we just had no idea whether people would actually be, in particular because at that point, Guitar Hero 3, which was now being made by another company, was our, you know, our former baby, our creation was now our competition, right. And it was being brought to market by a very, very capable publisher, Activision, spending a lot of money on it. Meanwhile, we're launching this game, and it's incredibly expensive, and we really didn't know if it was going to work, frankly. So we were very relieved that it did.
One of the things that I appreciate about Harmonix is how you do keep trying to change how a music game can be with games like A City Sleeps or even Beat Sports, right? Talk to me a little bit about making those decisions and deciding to try these new things.
Well, yeah, it's funny. It's a battle I am continually waging with journalists who use the words music game synonymously with rock performance simulation games. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Rock Band and Guitar Hero, they were what music games were in popular culture for a period of time, but they are just one thing. They are simulation of rock music performance, which is a powerful experience, but it is by no means the full universe of what music games can or should be. And thinking about what we do at just a kind of high, at the mission level, we're really interested in just inventing or discovering or creating new ways for people to experience the emotional power of music. And I mean, of course, there's already a tremendous amount of emotional power built into music. I mean, it's magical how impactful music is on human emotion, right? I don't understand what the hell it is. It's this, it's magic. And so there's already all that power there. And in traditional media, and even most video games, music is used to amplify the emotional content of the film or amplify the emotional content of the game. And we actually almost look at our job as the opposite, which is how can we use gameplay to amplify the emotional content of the music by forcing people to direct their attention and focus on the music itself and form a mental model of the music and become active participants in the music making, whether that's performative or creative. Generally speaking, we think, how can we use play and interaction design to take music, which already has all this emotional power, and just amplify it through play? And so the constant creative investigation process here is all about, like, what are the other forms of interaction with music and the narrative conceits that could surround that that would just deepen people's emotional engagement with music? So that can and will take many forms, and it's the question we're asking ourselves every day.
I've visited some studios in my time. And sometimes you'll walk into a place and feel the weight of unhappiness. But being here yesterday and meeting the folks that I met yesterday, everyone really seems on the same page. And I'm assuming that that comes from the leadership. So how does that happiness and overall kind of respect come from your mission? Where does that come from?
You know, my hope is that many or most of the people who are here at Harmonix are here in at least in part or hopefully large part because of our mission. And, you know, there are many incredibly talented game developers here who could be working at any game development studio, right? But they're here in large part because there's something special about what we do, I hope. And there's something incredibly joyful or joy-producing about music play. And so I don't know this, but my hope is that some of the positive energy that circulates around the company comes from the common purpose here and the way that we're able to bring joy to people's lives through the specific type of play that we make for the world.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that Iran is the better musician, the better programmer. So what are your strengths then?
I have no idea. The whole thing has just been a charade for, you know, 21 years now.
No way.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, again, Iran is the, he's, I mean, I'm not an engineer. I programmed as starting as a kid, but just as a hack. And even as a musician, it's really just as a hobbyist. He's much more serious. I would say that my role in this is bridging the gap between the special insider knowledge and what it takes to bring that across to all of the outsiders, like the other 99% of the population who like don't have that specialized knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I see my role as a designer as the kind of go-between.
How exciting is VR to you right now?
Massively exciting. You know, really, in fact, to some degree, I have to, as a person who loves making things and loves new technology, I'm like bubbling over with excitement about VR. And I, as a business person, I actually have to kind of contain and tamp down that excitement somewhat because, in fact, I think it's going to take some time for VR to achieve the kind of market penetration that will make it a business, right? But I view this as one of these, it's a question of when, not if, because I do believe that over the coming several years, VR will be very broadly adopted and will, at risk of sounding hyperbolic, will usher in the beginning of a new century of human experience. I do think we're going to be able to deliver experiences to people because of VR that have just been inaccessible up until now. And I'm very excited about that. And in particular, I'm very excited about our opportunity to be there at the beginning and help define what music is in VR. It's a very fortunate time to be a game maker because we're at the beginning of something profoundly new, and many of the old rules about what works and what doesn't and what's relevant have to be thrown away and rediscovered. It's a lot of fun.
What do you think about some of the other music games? How does that inspire you? Or
I and all of us here are constantly digesting this incredible ocean of amazing games that are being made right now and of all different sorts. I mean, the funny thing about the medium of games is that it encompasses a breadth of experience that is vastly larger than other media like film, right? Of course, there's a million different kinds of movies, like very different, that deal with different subject matter in different ways, but they still have a very common form factor. But when we talk about games, let's take two of my favorites from like recent years, like a mobile puzzle game like Threes and Uncharted are both games, and they have almost nothing to do with each other in terms of the type of player engagement or type of player experience or what they're about or what they're trading on, you know? And so, of course, that creates a much broader universe of creative opportunities for game makers to kind of digest and synthesize into their own creative vision. And so our inspiration comes from a lot of different places. You know, you mentioned the universe of indie games. There's a game from a few years ago, a music game called 140. It's on Steam. If anyone who's listening to this right now who likes music games and who has not played 140 should immediately go get 140 on Steam and play it. Completely different take on music gameplay and magical. And so we're, you know, for us, a lot of it, you know, we're bound to consume and digest as much of new games being made as possible because it really informs a lot of what we do. I'll quickly add, though, that I think great game makers derive much of their inspiration for making great games, not from just other games they're playing, but from the experiences they're having in their lives outside of games. You know, for example, here, a lot of the creative energy that we pour into the games that we make, you know, games like Rock Band, comes not from our experiences as gamers, but from our experiences as musicians and music lovers in the world outside of games. And I think that's important.
So you said you play Rock Band almost every weekend. What else do you play?
The game that I most recently played was The Witness, which I loved, mm-hmm. although I have not yet acquired the Platinum Trophy because the time trials at the end are kicking my ass. But I'm almost at the Platinum Trophy in The Witness. I really, really love it. And the one that I'm about to start is Hyper Light Drifter, which I was drawn into. I don't know much yet about the gameplay, but I was really just captivated by the trailer for the game, in large part because of the music, which just absolutely enchanted me. So the soundtrack alone for that game is enough to make me have just gone and bought it and will be probably playing it this weekend.
Are you a trophy chaser?
It depends upon the game.
Sure.
It really depends upon the game. In the case of The Witness, the game is, it provokes that kind of completionism, you know, so I kind of can't help myself.
And as far as music, what do you listen to? What are you listening to right now?
That is a very difficult question to answer just because my music tastes are incredibly diverse. It's all over the map. Mm-hmm. At the moment, there's a brilliant Swiss composer pianist by the name of Nick Bertsch, who just released his one of his ensembles just released a new album called Continuum. It's very difficult to categorize his music. Some people refer to it as Zen funk. He takes inspiration from both from jazz and funk and from post-minimalist/totalist, new music. I strongly recommended anyone who's looking for stuff to listen to should go check out Nick Bertsch today.
I do want to ask one more thing because I do wonder what it's like. Gamers are fickle. We know this. Mm-hmm. We are gamers. We complain about the games we play. Some people more vocally than others. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide what criticism to take seriously and what to ignore?
Well, I take all criticism seriously, you can't act on all criticism because, one of the challenges we have is that, for example, with a game like Rock Band is we have a large and very diverse audience that all want and need very different things out of the game. So we're trying to please all of those audiences all of the time, right? So, for example, we'll have one group of people who demands feature X and a second group who demands feature Y. And those two features have nothing to do with each other, and those audiences have nothing to do. So if in a particular month or a quarter we work on feature X and release feature X, the second group is furious with us. They're not listening to us. They don't care about us. They're going to go out of business because they're neglecting their fans, etc. And then in the next month or the next quarter, we release feature Y. And then that first group thinks, what the hell are they thinking? They're not in touch with the consumers. They hate us. They're ignoring us, etc. So, part of our challenge is, wrestling with that kind of diversity in an audience. It's part of the nature of a very diverse product like Rock Band. But I would say that we can't really afford to ignore any criticism. Even when we can't act on all of it, we have to think about it, think deeply about it, and synthesize it into, where our best guess is about where to focus our energies. So.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to episode 19 of Level with Emily Reese. We didn't have as much music in this one as normal. Was that jarring or was it fine? We're curious what you think about it. You can reach out to us directly through our Patreon page or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. I'm Emily Reese. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Is it okay if I just ask you a couple of questions later?
Hold on a minute.
How long have you lived in Boston?
I've lived in Boston for 52 years.
Are you 52?
I am 51 years old, and I've been doing food vending for 40 years.
Wow.
What kind of food?
Italian ice, sausages, hot dogs, churros. We sell everything from soup to nuts.
So when all these gamer people come to town to buy hot dogs, is that good or annoying?
Oh, no, it's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
It's entertaining for both us and for you. We look forward to it. It brings a lot of economy to Boston.
Yeah.
And it's just a joy of seeing how happy everybody is.
Nice.
Okay, so here's a question. Do you play video games?
Well, I'm a Pac-Man, Defender,
nice.
Guy,
yes.
So yes, when I saw the two trailers yesterday delivering the old-fashioned video games, the real ones that I'm used to,
yep.
When I saw that truck, I wanted to live in that truck for a few days.
It's one of the best parts of PAX is the arcade, right?
Yes, the arcade is, for me, I enjoy that.
So how many years have you been doing the...
This is our fifth year with the PAX.
Nice.
I think this is their eighth, and this is our fifth.
Okay. Do you get, as a vendor, do you get to go into PAX and, have access to the...
We do, but we don't have any time.
Sure.
Yeah.
The past 2 days, we've been setting up. I go in at 7 in the morning to 5 at night. My partner goes in from 5 at night, and he works until 11, 12 o'clock setting up. Because after we load everything, and you guys devour everything, we have to reload everything.
Right.
So we need two shifts to go all night long.
Yeah.
What's your name and what's your company?
My name's Paul. I work with Richie's Classic Italian Ice, but tomorrow we're going to be called The Lunchbox.
You can follow us on Twitter at Level with Emily and learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Don't forget, June is J-O-O-N.